listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
There's a swing and a miss on a good slider down below the knees. Fourth strikeout for Kershaw, who is in a groove right now. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Great down and in slider there from Kershaw, and he has it rolling right now.
Look back by Glass now. The first pitch swing and a high fly ball. Right center field. It is well hit. Kiermaier back. It's gone. He hit it into the Dodger bullpen. And Cody Bellinger has given the Dodgers a 2-0 lead.
Mookie Betts, the first batter that Fleming faces, and Betts sends a fly ball to right field. It's pretty well hit. It's carrying. It's gone. Opposite field home run, Mookie Betts. And it is 7-1. And the Dodgers, behind a great performance from Clayton Kershaw, another home run from Cody Bellinger, and then they pour it on in the middle innings, and they win game one, 8-3.
Dodgers up 1-0, game two tonight. You'll hear it right here on ESPN 1000. And the man behind the mic, the man on the call, you just heard him, Dan Shulman. He joins Carmen and Yurko now on the Corona Hotline on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're good. Thank you, as always, for the time. Kershaw was something last night. In that first inning,
good.
Did you think, oh boy, here we go again with like postseason Clayton Kershaw, who's been a little bit of an enigma during the course of his dominant career?
Yeah, a little bit. I've never been, like, I think the guy, he's one of the best pitchers who's ever lived, right? And I think he's been too good and he's done too much for the game. I've never been a joker, can't do it enough. Like, I hate that narrative. Sometimes the other guys are pretty good too. And you know, sometimes he's been asked to stay in games longer because they didn't have enough of the bullpen. Sometimes he's come in on 2 days rest because they needed somebody. So, listen, I'm not saying he's been great in the playoffs, but I think the narrative kind of was a little harsh on him. So, to be honest with you, in the first inning, in my mind, I wasn't going, uh-oh, here we go again, or big picture. Like, it's the first inning of the World Series, and we're calling it from a studio, and I'm just trying to get my, you know, I'm just trying to buckle up my seatbelt and, you know, get comfortable there. So, but as soon as he came out for the second inning, he was nails. And I had done the Brewers and the Dodgers in the first round for ESPN Radio, and he was lights out in that game for 8 innings, struck out 13. So, first inning, yeah, he didn't have as good command. His slider wasn't biting. He wasn't really locating it yet. Walked a guy, which he doesn't do very often, but from the second inning on, he looked like the best version of himself.
Were you surprised that he was yanked after 78 pitches, or did that seem to make sense considering the way the game was going at that point after six?
Yeah, I think so. When it was 6-1, he was still coming back in, and then when it got to be 8-1, we saw a shot on the Fox monitor. Dave Roberts like looked for him, found him, and gave him a hug. And so at 8-1, they said, at 6-1, he was coming back for the seventh inning, which I thought was great. And at 8-1, they said, okay, why don't we shut it down, which I also think is smart. You know, he's going to pitch one more time, maybe twice. We don't know. Right. You know, he could start 5 and be available in 7. I don't think they do 1-4-7, short rest. But 78 pitches, you know, why have him throw 96 if he can throw 78? And a 7-run lead is pretty comfortable, and Roberts knew he had a pretty good chance of being able to close it out without using his key reliever. So I think in the big picture, it made sense.
You never know how these things are going to go, how the series are going to go, Dan. You know, just last Friday, as we were saying goodbye for the week, and the Dodgers were down 3-1 against the Braves facing elimination. You know, if we had a brief conversation about, man, you know, look at the Dodgers, it's going to happen again, yeah. And then you got the, oh, they're the Braves of the 90s, and they're this, and and then boom, 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 you know, here they are with a one-game lead in the World Series. So, who the hell knows how momentum shifts? But is it starting to feel like this might be the Dodgers' turn after all this? Like, this team is really good, and they're really playing with a lot of momentum right now.
They're really good. They're the best team in baseball. Like above all else, they're the most talented team. Let's say that. They're the most talented team in baseball. Like, Atlanta's got a lot of talent. The Yankees have a lot of talent. Other teams have a lot of talent. But the Dodgers are the most talented team. I don't know how anybody could really argue the point. If their pitching is just pretty good, they're going to win. And you know, they might have been the best team in baseball last year, the year before, the year before, and they added Mookie Betts.
Right.
They added one of the three best players in the game. And look what he did last night. Well, first of all, look at the three catches he made in the National League Championship Series, right? And then last night, he hits a home run, draws a walk, has a base hit, steals two bases, and scores on the contact play from third base with the infield in. How many guys can do all of those things in the same game?
Yeah.
It's a really short list. And he's a phenomenal player and a phenomenal teammate, and he's all about winning, and you can see how much they love him, and even though he hasn't been there very long. So, listen, they're pitching. It can be a little up in the air, like they're starting Tony Gonsolin tonight. He's not going to go more than a couple of innings. We might see Urias. We might see May. Who knows who we see after that? Who knows what they do in game four? But they've gotten this far doing it this way, and their lineup is just so explosive. To me, they're like the Rays lineup, but on a higher level, because they can go right, left, right, left, right, left, all the way down. They can bring guys off the bench when they need to. But like Cody Bellinger's hitting sixth.
I know.
You know, I mean, and I know he didn't have his greatest year, but he's still Cody Bellinger. They're just really, really good.
What are the odds of Blake Snell coming up with a performance of a lifetime tonight?
I think they need it. And somebody asked me yesterday, you know, pick one guy who's got to be good for the Rays to win this series. And I said Blake Snell. I thought they'd get a little more out of Glasnow. The thing about Glasnow and Snell is they both got like wicked stuff, great stuff. But they both, the command can be a little bit wobbly for them. And it's one thing if you're facing, a young team that's really, you know, they chase a lot. They're really aggressive. The Dodgers aren't those guys. I've had every Tampa Bay game in the playoffs. I've been on the American League side the whole way. The last time out, he threw like 82 pitches in four innings, walked four. He just had to work so hard. And they're going to make him work tonight, like they made Glasnow work last night. I don't think the odds are great. I think if you're Tampa Bay, you're hoping for four or five innings, and it's 1-1 or 2-2, and then you're close enough, you're in it, where Kevin Cash says, okay, I'm bringing my heavyweights out of the bullpen. Here come Fairbanks. Here comes Castillo. Here comes Anderson. If they're down a couple of runs, I don't know if he uses them, even with an off day tomorrow. So to me, the game is keep it tied into the middle innings and then hope the Tampa Bay bullpen can be better than the Dodger bullpen.
Dan Schulman's our guest. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Will you ever get used to, and hopefully you won't have to do it after this season, but I mean, has it gotten any easier or more comfortable to do these games from 1,000 miles away in a studio in Bristol?
A little bit. So I did every Blue Jay game this year, and we did that from a studio in Toronto, you know, because the Blue Jays were playing in Buffalo. I haven't been in a Major League Stadium this year.
Wow.
So we did all 60 from Toronto because I couldn't go to Buffalo, because when the Jays went on the road, we weren't going on the road with them. And if I went back to Canada, you have to isolate for 14 days. So I couldn't. So we did all 60 from Toronto. So I got used to it early. Now, it was a larger studio, a television studio, bigger monitors, that sort of thing. So I had that experience when I got to Bristol to start the playoffs. And just like in Toronto, everybody at ESPN, I mean, they've been wonderful. They're trying, you know, they're doing everything they can do. So really, really quickly, we have like a program monitor, which is what you see on TV when you're watching the game at home. We have a high home monitor. We call it all nine because it shows all nine defenders. Hmm. So we can see if the shift is on, if the runner's trying to steal. But, you have to get used to. You look at the program monitor to see the pitch, and, that's a stealing third, and I didn't see that. And I was late on the bet steal last night because it wasn't in the top of my head. He could be stealing. And a little tricky thing, the all nine monitors a little bit delayed from the program monitor. So if I want to see if Mookie's stealing, by the time I look back at the program monitor, the ball's been hit already, or the catcher's caught the ball already. And that's a little weird. But everybody's doing their best, right? It's a pandemic. And the options are doing it this way or not doing it at all. And that's a very easy choice for
me. Yeah, right. The all nine monitor. So you got the all 22 tape. Now you got an all nine monitor for these guys in baseball. That's great. Do you have somebody there, like almost like in football with a spotter? I mean, can somebody help you? Or are you looking at all these by yourself trying to figure out what's going on?
So I'm looking at all of them. I've got the all nine on like a large computer monitor size thing right in front of me. I've got a big program monitor behind that. And then we've got another thing called the multi-view, which shows both bullpens and the scoreboard from the ballpark.
Wow.
You know, so we can look at that, you know, mound visits, runs hit, errors, left on base, whatever, if we want to total something up. So we have a producer who I can see through the other side of the glass. He's in the control room, and he's another set of eyes. You know, Gratterall's getting up in the pen. Kike is going to pinch hit. It's another set of eyes, which is always helpful. But you just get used to, when I do a game normally, I look at the monitor until the ball is hit, and then I look at the field. Those are the only two places I look, monitor, field. Now you're kind of bouncing around a little bit. So it's even something as small as, well, which monitors do we want which things in? I don't want to have to look, you know, 90 degrees to my left for this and 90 degrees to my right for that. Let's, you know, can we put them all in? And they've got to be in a good spot for Singy and Jess, too, right? That they've got to have.
Sure.
And then the other thing I'll have, so Buster is joining us every now and again, but he's at home. He's not in Bristol. So we have an iPad up with a FaceTime just so Buster and I can see each other's faces. So if we need to communicate non-verbally or if he wants to get in, he'll text me say, I want to get in, and I'll look at the FaceTime and I'll give him like the thumbs up or the 1 minute, or I'll get right, you know, a little hand signal. So that's how we're trying to all communicate as best we can.
A lot of moving parts. It's crazy. Before we let you go, you mentioned you did all those Rays games. You know, I think for diehard baseball fans, it's easy to like them. You can appreciate the way they do this, the way they've done it for a long time, Dan. The weird thing I wonder is, like, is it good for baseball because they're just not very sexy and casual fans don't really know about them and they might not be interested in them? That's kind of like it's hard to know if this is good or bad for baseball when a team like the Rays make it to the World Series.
I think it's good for baseball. I think in every sport, you know, like, let's use my other sport, college basketball, as an example. You're always going to have Cinderellas. And are you going to know as much about, you know, Butler back in their heyday as you do about Duke? No.
Yeah.
But what attracts you to them is that they're the underdog. And if you don't know who to root for, you probably root for the underdog. And if the Rays did it the conventional way, they wouldn't be here. They have to allocate their money. I think they're very smart. And again, because I'm a Blue Jay broadcaster, they're in the same division. I see the Rays all the time. So they're very smart. They allocate their resources incredibly well. You can buy defense and relief pitching easier than you can buy a slugger. You know, if they want to go out and sign a big slugger on the market, they can't do that. Or if they do that, they won't have any money left for anybody else. So I admire them, and I think they're very smart, and I think they do a great job. And I can tell you, again, as a broadcaster for a team that gets their brains beat in by the Rays pretty regularly, they're hard to play against. You've got to play a really, really good game to beat them, unless you're just going to overwhelm them with talent. And I think it's good for baseball, win or lose. It's nice. You know, the game is becoming, if homogenous is the right word, you know, it's so sane, you know, home runs and strikeouts and this and that. I like the fact that they always have pinch hitters, that they've always got 98 coming out of the bullpen. I like the fact that they're different. It's just like college basketball. I like different environments and teams that play in different ways. And I think the Rays are good for baseball. I really do.
Should the White Sox be all in on A.J. Hinch?
Yeah, I would be. Yes, I would be. I think so. This may be a bad take. Well, first of all, I think A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora are both great managers, and what they did was wrong, and I'm not giving them any kind of a pass on that, but I think they're good people, and I think I would like to think they've learned from their mistakes. A.J., I spent a lot of time doing Houston games in the playoffs for ESPN Radio the last few years, obviously, and we would always get 15 minutes a game, like just us, me and Singer, me and Booney, or whoever's doing the games, just us and the manager. I got to tell you, he's really good, man. And he is not just the, hey, this is what the front office wants, analytics guy. Like, he is that guy, but he's not just that guy. He's got a really good feel for people. And I know from some of the decisions he's made in the playoffs, he's told us about conversations he's had with this guy, why you're not in the lineup, here's how I'm going to use you. And I think he's great. I really do. And somebody's going to get him. He's going to manage again.
Yes.
So somebody's going to get him, and they'll be lucky.
Hopefully it's the Sox. Dan, it's always great talking to you. Thanks so much. We'll be listening tonight.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right, you all too. Right. There's Thanks. Dan Schulman. He'll be on the call with Jess Mendoza and Singleton and Buster only tonight for Game 2 after Black and Abdallah just after 7. You'll catch it here on ESPN 1000. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
everyone's having a great day. Carmen and Yurko. Yurko's got this new thing every Tuesday night, bar trivia.
Oh, boy.
And we told you last week, I mean, some of the questions, mod on. I mean, impossible stuff. But Yurko and his team did very well last night.
A little bit easier. And it was just me and Don Subchock last night.
Just the two of you?
That's it. The two of us.
Yurko threw some of us at him. Not nearly as impossible as last week. We fared much better.
Right.
In the few that you already gave us.
The five languages, the official language of South America.
Yes, Spanish, Portuguese for Brazil, English, French. And then Aruba is part of South America?
The Dutch is the official one, and I know Aruba is part of the Netherlands, right?
Yeah, it's part of the Netherlands. Dutch and Papiamento.
There you go. So those are the five Dutch. Yes.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That one you can figure out. It's not so hard.
Right. Well, then that's exactly it. And, you know, because your mom was, from Argentina.
Yes.
I thought maybe Italian might be down there. Somebody's speaking Italian.
Well, yeah, in the barrios, maybe in, La Boca, they're speaking Italian.
Well, there you go.
It's not an official language.
But it's not an official language. And that's what I said to myself to convince myself of that.
Self.
The other one is the Bushmen live in what desert?
The Kalahari.
The Kalahari.
Yeah.
There were no difficult scientific ones. Which mathematical property utilizes a borrowing?
Harriet's method of solving metric.
No, cubits. No. Which?
Addition.
Borrowing.
Subtraction.
Thank you.
Got to borrow.
Subtraction.
When you're subtracting, you got to borrow.
What is a triangle with all sides are the same?
Equilateral triangle.
Equilateral. I got isosceles from the left. I had isosceles from the right.
No, equilateral.
I go, really, guys? Two sides are equal? I'm looking.
Let's go,
I go,
guys.
Next thing you're going to throw scalene and obtuse at me, huh? So come on, guys. Okay, you guys need a refresher course on this stuff.
Yeah. But it's a hard trivia.
Yeah, it was fun trivia yesterday. It was a little easier this week than it was last week. And then they, Meatloaf, Schmeatloaf, and then blank blank, the line from Christmas Story.
Meatloaf, Schmeatloaf, double bubble beatloaf?
Double beatloaf.
Double beatloaf.
Double beatloaf was the answer. And them are the hardest ones.
That's hard, yeah.
Then there was one that said Al Pacino in the middle. The other one, so it's three people, and they've got something in common.
Okay.
And Tony the Tiger was on the right-hand side. And then it said this is an actress. She's a songwriter. She's a singer. She's a host. She's a this. She's a that. So they were all Tonys. And the other one was Birdman. The first one was Birdman. Second one was Al Pacino. Then it was a description of a young lady that happens to do a ton of stuff. And the Tiger was the hint. So they're all Tonys. The Birdman's Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk.
Which is his nickname, right. The Birdman, Tony Hawk.
The great skateboarder.
Tony Montana.
Tony Montoya. Right?
Montana. Tony Montana from Scarface.
I know. I always thought it was Tony Montoya.
No, it's Montana.
All right, my bad. I'm not a huge Scarface guy.
Okay, well, Scarface. Tony
Montana.
I always
thought it was Tony Montoya.
And then the difficult one was Tony Braxton.
Ah.
But I got Tony Braxton. Yeah. So
boy, good for you.
Yeah, so them are one of the keys. Either way, we won. Every round you win, we won the first two rounds, you get a free drink. If you win, you get $100.
Nice.
So Donnie didn't want the money. I gave him a 20 anyway. We paid our bill.
I love bar trivia.
And we're in good shape.
I'd like to come and play bar trivia with you in Northwest Indiana.
Come on down, kid.
I really would. We dominate
your show. Sure, you wear your mask, Carm.
I'll wear my mask.
I've got
my White Sox mask, thanks to our guy Dino from Dino Sports Fan Shop up in the Glen. He sent us some swag.
He said he was going to send me a Real Madrid one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
A mask?
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Still
waiting. We better get Dino on that. Let's go, Dino. I wear my White Sox one every day. I got two of them.
Do you?
My mask.
Wonderful.
I got a backup. All right, now I've got some trivia for you guys.
All right,
ready?
Go ahead.
Since Yurko was doing trivia last night. Clayton Kershaw, you probably heard this, passed John Smoltz last night. He moved into second place on the all-time postseason strikeout list.
Right.
He's very close to first place. It might even happen this postseason. 201 career postseason strikeouts for Clayton Kershaw. In the top 10, there are three other active pitchers. Can you name them?
So in the top 10, three.
In the top 10 all-time postseason strikeouts.
Justin Verlander.
Justin Verlander is correct, Yurko. Good job. And he is number one.
Thank you.
The man that Clayton Kershaw is trying to pass.
Thank you.
Justin Verlander has 205 career postseason strikeouts. Nicely done. So you got one of them. You need two more.
I need two more.
Inside the top 10.
John Lester?
John Lester is correct.
John Lester.
And I thought that was the hard one. John Lester is ninth all-time in the postseason, ahead of the big unit with 133 career postseason.
And the big unit's not the other answer you're looking for.
No,
you're looking
for another active.
It's not Mad Bum, is it?
It is not Mad Bum. No, I hadn't pitched. Not probably just hasn't pitched enough, believe it or not, in the postseason.
Even though he did have three victories in one World Series.
Yeah, he had the most dominant postseason we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
See, I thought Lester was the hard one. You guys are missing a fairly obvious one.
Hmm. Cole hasn't been there long enough.
Nope, not long enough. You're right.
Boston? Somebody from Boston?
Nobody from Boston.
Nobody
not
from
Chris
Boston.
Sale hasn't been in the postseason.
Oh, Scherzer? Oh,
Max Scherzer is correct.
Scherzer.
Good job by Mellor. There you go. Those are your four active pitchers that are in the top 10. Verlander, Kershaw, Scherzer's eighth, John Lester
would
is
be a
ninth.
Good team.
A product of that, yes. I'll come to Trivia Night next Tuesday. Here. The not problem, but the it's just the volume of postseason.
Sure.
Divisional series now.
Of course.
Play-in games. You have more opportunities. That's why Lester came to my mind, because remember when he pitched for the A's in
the A's
play-in
and
game? That's what stood out to me. Oh, he must be in this.
A lot of years in Boston, all the years with the Cubs. You get a lot of opportunities.
Who's the commissioner of baseball?
Rob Manfred.
Manfred wants the playoffs to stay the way they are now.
That's too much.
Those changes going forward, he still wants the expanded format with the playoffs.
I don't think it'll ever go back.
Too much cash? Doesn't it seem like it's too much when over half the league is making a postseason?
Absolutely, but
I guess
you
do
ever
notice
sport to give back money?
No.
Or pass on money that they currently have in their coffers?
So this will be it. There'll be a play-in series. Then there will be an LDS. Then there'll be an LCS. And then it'll be the World Series. This is the new norm?
I think so.
Hard to imagine it goes back. You're right. Too much cash.
The extra inning rule he likes, too.
Yeah.
Starting a guy in second base. So there's a couple things that they've changed. Well, like I said, I don't think any general manager in the league will complain about the...
Not one.
Not one will complain about the extra inning rule.
No, it helps save your bullpen.
The only people that can complain are like old school diehard baseball fans. Yeah. That's it.
I think, though, especially where we're at now, next season kind of being, obviously every team wants to have as many stands back in the stadiums that they can have, but we don't know what that looks like. And so with that uncertainty going forward, I think you're definitely next year going to probably have this playoff format.
Certainly next year. Then it'll be interesting.
But then
it's hard to go back. After 2 years of it and the added revenue, it's going to be hard to go back. Especially with all the teams crying poor and the Cubs, you see what the Cubs did? I was reading John Greenberg this morning at The Athletic. I mean, the Cubs slashed like 100 jobs. Peter Chase, who we've known for a long time, came from Boston and was heading their media relations department for a long time.
You don't allow fans in the stadium. What do you think is going to happen?
Boy, it's sad. I mean,
what jobs are there to do? There's no jobs to do.
Have the White Sox cut a bunch of jobs? I haven't read that.
No, they've been
Sox have been
really good about keeping a lot of people.
Good for
on
Jerry.
Staff.
I mean, we'll give a tip of the cap to Jerry Reinsdorf here. I mean, I don't think now they might not have had as extensive of a scouting department and an international department as the Cubs had. They had a very extensive one because of Theo.
It's hard to
and
collect,
his beliefs.
It's hard to collect for having big pasta outside your stadium when nobody's outside your stadium.
That's true.
Advertising revenue for inside the stadium. Still got that debt load. Every month that debt load isn't being forgiven. Every month they've got to come up with that and pay the bank. Mm. It doesn't go away, your debt load.
This is where the White Sox sweetheart deal
makes a big difference.
Or a guaranteed rate with the city.
Taxpayers of Illinois get shelled, but that's okay.
Yeah right.
I don't think they're taking it as hard as most teams.
They're probably not, because they're not on the hook for that, right? I mean, they're getting the subsidies from the state. So that could be different, or the difference in allowing them to...
Remember I asked the question, if they didn't get to that threshold, are they going to collect all that money?
That's a good question.
Do we ever find out the answer?
That's a question for
pandemic-shortened year?
So if the White Sox
are they still eligible for those funds?
Where they don't hit a certain number, they get money from the state, right, Yurko? That's the way that works. And so Yurko said, well, they're obviously not going to hit there are no fans this year. Is there some sort of clause? Like, what's the legalese of this? Is there some sort of clause?
Is there a force majeure clause that the state can
enact? We're not
because
of your
pandemic.
Money. Or is Jerry going to go and say, no, you owe me my money?
I don't think Jerry would have to insist if there isn't that in the contract, and it's not. It could be in the contract and still not be enforced by the government. They might just say, "Well, we're not going to. We're just giving him the money because that's what we agreed to."
Jeez,
Jerry doesn't have to say a thing. It's the state of Illinois that has to say, the sports authority has to say something, and then Jerry could then respond to them. But if they just fork over the cash, what's he responding for?
If Jerry, well, you're right. If Jerry can use it to not lay off a bunch of employees, I guess that's good. I mean, it might be the one benefit that they do have against some
different
teams.
I don't know which way it is.
No idea.
I just asked the question. That's all.
Yeah, no idea. Pete says the old school reference didn't go unnoticed there. Harriet's method of solving cubics. I love that when they're stealing Artie Lang's in the truck, right? And he's relaying the message to them on the test. Vince Vaughn does. Good test. Harriet's method of solving cubics. That's so great. 312-332-3776. Speaking of some of our teams, as we kind of sprayed all fields here a little bit, the Blackhawks released a statement yesterday, Yurko, about the direction of their team. And I still think it's kind of confusing. We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Remember to watch us on Twitch every day live in the First Midwest Bank State Street Studios, twitch.tv, or download the Twitch app, search ESPN 1000 Chicago. It's all powered by the great folks at Miller Lite. Tomorrow we're going to have Doc Emrick on, recently retired. Doc's got a book out, too. Yurko's thumbing through it right now as we speak. So what time's Doc tomorrow, Merck?
It's at 11.
11 o'clock tomorrow. We'll talk to Doc Emrick. That should be a lot of fun. Speaking of hockey, how about the Blackhawks? They released a message to their fans, Yurko.
Oh, inspirational, I'm sure.
Inspirational. We recently said goodbye to a pair of popular two-time champions and acquired some new players via trade and free agency. We understand it was tough to see those respected veterans go and realize you may have some questions about our direction. We'd like to address that direction and share why we're hopeful for the future of Blackhawks hockey. We're committed to developing young players and rebuilding our roster. It's rare that teams write that word down, rebuilding.
Well, I mean, what have you been doing the last 5 years?
I don't know. We're committed to developing young players and rebuilding our roster. We want more than another window to win. We want to reach the summit again and stay there. An effort that will require a stockpile of emerging talent to complement our top players. The influx of youth and their progression will provide roster flexibility and depth throughout our lineup. We were already the youngest team in the 2020 playoffs, and several Blackhawks experienced that intensity for the first time. This will help to further establish a culture that embraces the grind of improvement driven by competitors who are relentless, engaged, and motivated by a team-first mentality to win. As our young players develop and learn how to win consistently, they'll make some mistakes. Inevitably, we'll miss the mark sometimes, too, but we'll communicate openly with you on this journey together. We know that what must come next will be more than just words, and that inspires us from the Chicago Blackhawks. Again, they actually write down rebuilding, but I still don't know what that plan consists of. When they write, we want more than another window to win, I'm not sure that, I mean, really, isn't that the goal, to be in a window? I don't know. I don't know if I get that. That's word salad to me. That's Waddle word salad. That's all that is. We want more than another window to win. We want to reach the summit again and stay there. Come on. That's word salad.
You know what my feeling are. You're currently stuck in the Detroit Red Wings rebuilding after they won in 08 and 9.
They went 2 years in 09 and they lost. Won in 08 and then they went back in 09 and they lost.
You now have Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk, and you've got nothing else around them. And you're going to try to win, and you're not going to be able to win. And that's just the way of the world. And Detroit got nothing for either of them. Datsyuk left, went to go play in Russia. Zetterberg got old and lost his skill. And guess what? That's what you're doing here.
The problem is, though, I don't know that they can move these. When they write an effort that's going to require,
they need approval Kane or Taves.
I understand. I'm telling you, we're going all out rebuild.
And so you think that they're doing this to force them into a miserable situation where they have no choice?
No. What I would do is do that.
But, I mean, do you think the Hawks are doing that? Like saying goodbye to Crawford, trading Brandon Saad? Like, do you think that these moves are being made so that Bowman is hopeful that they go to him and say, okay, we don't want to be part of it. Like, they released this statement now talking about a rebuild. Yeah. Is it so that Taves and Kane get the message and they say, okay, fine, send us somewhere where we can win?
I understand you want to be Chicago. You live in Chicago, this, that. That's like, all fine and dandy. They'd be healthy scratches for me.
Oh, stop.
You're not listening.
You'd kill the fan base.
He'd be healthy scratches. I've got to rebuild, Carm. Kill the fan base. What do you think's been happening the last five years, Carm?
I know, but I mean, you can't.
Yeah, what do you think? They're clamoring to get in there? You think Rocky Wirtz has come here to tell us he sold 20,000 units of beer before the national anthem even went on? No, that's not happening anymore. That is not happening anymore. Where in the world does it say a player's got to be a lifelong anybody anymore?
No, I know. I don't understand that. It doesn't.
I got to cash in. Thank you, gentlemen, for everything you've done for the Chicago Blackhawks. It's time to go. And you're two healthy scratches, and you'll remain upstairs for the remainder. For the remainder until we figure it out. That's how your salary cap gets solved, too, guys.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I like the way that looks across the league. Can you imagine players talking about that? I mean, around the league, like,
what are you going to do?
You can't healthy scratch Patrick Kane. Stop
I got a group.
He's like the fourth or fifth best player in the league.
I got 4 years worth of Canadians that want to come to the Chicago Blackhawks and play.
4 years worth of Canadians.
4 years of healthy Canadians coming down who want to be Chicago.
Maybe
Blackhawks.
A Swede.
Yeah,
a Russian.
That's fine. That's fine. I think the point is you've got to convince these guys that, hey, you guys need to move. You need to go.
And I think they're trying to do that, you know. I mean, Taves recently said to Mark Lazarus, this is my home. I mean, he didn't make it sound like he wants to go anywhere. You think Patrick Kane wants to go to Buffalo? Good luck. Who the hell would ever want to go back to Buffalo? And that organization is basically what the Hawks were 20 years ago. I mean, aren't the Sabres at this point routinely described and ranked as possibly the worst organization in North American sports? They are literally what the Hawks were 20 years ago. You think Patrick Kane wants to go there?
Well, it doesn't have to be Buffalo.
The worst. No, I know, but the Yerkes always said you send him back home. You get Jack Eichel. Eichel wants out. Okay, he's out. Yeah, would I trade Patrick Kane for
center,
Jack Eichel
by
at
way,
this point?
A center, by the way.
I might. I think about
well,
it.
You might?
I would. Okay. I would. Of course I would. But, I mean, you think Patrick Kane wants to go to Buffalo? Of course not. Where are these guys going to go? What are you really doing
I'm
when
sending
you write
Taves to Winnipeg?
Well, that maybe I could see, because they're at least competitive and they got a diehard fan base. An effort that will require stockpile of emerging talent to complement our top players. What does that mean? You're stockpiling young players, playing them with the players you have. You're going to be, again, a team that is really not going anywhere. You're not the worst. You're not the best.
Listen, it doesn't bring up the bigger picture. The bigger picture is Dan Bowman doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
I think this
That's even the bigger picture. All right? So what I want to do would be a plan in place that I would have where you're bringing minor leaguers in and top flight talent. That's what you're bringing in and draft choices. That's what you'd be bringing back.
I think this statement, coupled with the moves they made, probably the Saad move more than any other, is a statement to Taves and Kane. Think about it. Think about if you really want to be here or not. Because maybe they are going to finally, they want to go down the path that Yurko's been telling them to go down for so many years. The path that I haven't wanted them to go down.
2 years now, this is my third year I've been telling you to go down that path.
Maybe the moves they made in this statement. Again, when do you see organizations release a statement like this to their fan base writing down the word rebuild? You show me the teams that write that put that word in print. Even the teams like the Astros and the Cubs and the White Sox that tank don't say it. Well, they deny it. When they have to go on record, they deny that's what they're doing. Is this, from the Blackhawks, a message to the two saying, think about it long and hard, because we're not going to be very good?
Is it also Machiavellian in the sense that you would never hear the word rebuild if you knew you had to sell tickets? But with the uncertainty of selling tickets in the future,
that's a good question.
It's easier to write down rebuild.
That's an excellent question.
By the way, November 19th, which is less than a month from now, your guy Patrick Kane turns 32.
He's still pretty great, Yurko.
I'm not saying he's not great. You've got to trade him when they still have value.
So that's why I'm saying,
I can't trade a guy when he's 35 and doesn't have the same value with him when he's 32.
And Taves is already 32. He turned 32 in April.
And he'll be 33 coming up this year. By the end of this year, he'll be 33. Yes.
So is it twofold? Like Meller said, you're probably not going to have fans. And if you do, you're going to have a limited number of fans anyway. Let's face it. The idea that an NHL season is starting in January and the building's packed, there's no chance, guys. There's no chance. So is it, I like that Machiavellian word, is it, does it, are you trying to kill two birds with one stone here? Like, are you in a perfect opportunity to go ahead and pen something like this? Or you can write it, you're not going to take a hit at the box office, or the gate, I should say, and you're sending a message to Taves and Kane. You don't want to get moved? Think long and hard, because we're rebuilding, and that's what we want to do right now. It sucks that they're here, but at the same time, they did deliver to all of us that are fans three championships.
They did. 10, 13,
it, it wasn't one. It wasn't disappointing. It wasn't, oh, what could have been. Like, you're right, Yurk. They did deliver three of them. And like, okay, maybe it is time to completely, you've got to reset the whole damn thing. Maybe you're right. I've always said Taves and Kane are too good. Try to win with them, but... Maybe they're finally at a point where they're saying we gotta totally hit the reset. We gotta shut it down and reset the whole thing.
I said it 2 years ago when they really had value.
Yeah, I know it's
Kane still has
a ton of value.
Okay, but 2 years later, the question was never that is the arrow eventually coming down. You still had quality years ahead of them. There's a legitimate question: at what point do they start coming down?
I would counter
that. Okay, go ahead.
Kane is still one of the most elite offensive players in this league. Jonathan Taves is a year removed from his most productive point season in his career, and look at the way he just played in the playoffs. Now that was probably more of a product of Taves getting 2 months off, 3 months off.
Right.
But look at the way Johnny played in the playoffs. Johnny Taves was a beast against Edmonton.
I love the way you talk about both of them. You know why? Because then there's still value there.
That's what I'm saying.
People might believe it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Okay,
Two years from now won't be the same. And is that why the Hawks are doing this now? And is this a very calculated press release? Because they want the message to be received loud and clear by Taves and Kane. You got to help us here. Go win somewhere else while you can, while you still have value, and waive those no-move clauses so that we can trade you.
And maybe they haven't seen any of the 1,000 commercials that are out there about that fair tax. But if I was them, I'd be heading to Florida, Nevada, Arizona,
Texas.
Any one of these states that doesn't have state taxes where I'd be flying to myself.
Nashville?
Yeah.
Tennessee? Go play for Joel again?
Get out while you can is what I'd be telling them all.
Are the Hawks sending a message to two of the franchises, like, you know what, five greatest players of all time? Time to get out? 312-332-3776. Oh, I can't believe we're here. But again, they did deliver three championships. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll come right back.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
If you miss something, the podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about the bad trades in baseball history and how hard it must be for Red Sox fans to, you know, you watch a homegrown talent like Mookie Betts, who was already a star, an MVP in the league, second best player in the league for a number of years now, and he's doing it on the other coast for the Dodgers. I mean, he did it all last night, like Dan Schulman said when he joined us earlier. That was a great interview with Schulman, by the way. If you missed it, check out the podcast, download the ESPN Chicago app, catch up on all the shows, all the great interviews from us, Waddle and Sylvie, Catman, Odds Couple, all the great original programming, stuff like that, Black and Abdallah. It's all there for you on the ESPN Chicago app. But Schulman was really good talking about the game, talking about what it's like in Bristol doing these games, all the monitors he's looking at to try to follow along best he can since he can't be in the studio. But yeah, it's got to be tough. And I said no trade is going to be as bad as the White Sox dealing Tatis. Now, in fairness, different than trading Betts. I mean, Tatis was 17. He was a kid when they traded him. 17, 18 years old. He was playing in fall ball, for crying out loud. Still a dumb trade and a bad trade. But a few people on Twitter chimed in. Worst trade, even worse than Tatis, is Adam Jones for Eric Bedard. Not quite, I don't think. Adam Jones, hell of a player, but Tatis is trending to a special place
a
here,
different
unfortunately.
Level.
Yeah. We had Sammy for George Bell. You know, you got a lot of that, obviously. Sammy, if not for some of the allegations surrounding him, you know, probably more in the conversation for Hall of Fame. Although I still don't think it's a slam dunk like everybody thinks for Sammy for the Hall of Fame. But he was awfully prolific for an extended period of time as an offensive player. So, yeah, that one, not a good one. But Smoltz for Doyle Alexander. I think Smoltz even referenced that last night. He joked about, you know, knowing what it's like to be part of a lopsided deal. He was famously traded for Doyle Alexander.
Did you hear the story he told last night about his first All-Star game? That he was really nervous, first All-Star game, and it was in the old Anaheim Stadium.
Yeah.
And Lasorda said, get Smoltz up. And Smoltz was too nervous to ask anyone how to get down to the bullpen. So Lasorda goes, is Smoltz ready? And Smoltz is sitting right next to him, and he goes, I'm right here. And he goes, you're not warmed up? And he goes, I don't know how to get to the bullpen. And he goes, how many pitches you need? He goes, give me 7 to 10 pitches and I'll be ready.
That's a pretty good story. So that one comes to mind. But, yeah, and this one for the Dodgers is going to work out quite well, I would think, for years to come. Mookie's like 27, right? 28? I mean, isn't he 27, 28 years old? It's like, it's crazy. He's still young. You know, Bryant's going to be a 30-year-old free agent. That's not as good. Mookie still gets the trade he wants, gets the contract he wants from the Dodgers, and is still on the right side of 30 for a couple of years. He's awfully good. There's nobody close in baseball the last 2 years in terms of WAR, going back to 2015. So what is that, 6 seasons?
Yes.
Nobody close to Trout and Betts. Trout with 46.7, Betts with 42.9. That's how close Mookie is. And then the next closest guy is
Ian Happ.
No, not Ian Happ, Yurko. A full 10 wins above replacement behind.
Wow, that's a lot.
Nolan Arenado. 32.8. Goldie with 30. Manny Machado, fifth, with 29.8.
And part of, like, I think Mookie Betts doesn't get enough credit because he always has to be lumped in with what might be the greatest Trout. Baseball player who's ever played the game when all is said and done.
Correct.
Like, and that may sound, you know, blasphemous, but if you go look at the numbers,
no,
Trout, where he's at right now, he's on pace to be the best player ever in the history of baseball.
He's the best player since Mickey Mantle. And so Mellor's right. Like, you're comparing him against someone who is going to be an all-time elite, maybe the best set, you know, somewhere in the top, the conversation for the top three ball players to ever play. So, yeah, Mookie kind of gets, like, lumped into that. But he really does do everything well. We highlighted it yesterday when we played the montage from the weekend. He is a Gold Glove winner, and sometimes those can be deceiving. Like, Derek Jeter won Gold Gloves.
Right.
There were 6 defensive shortstops that were better every year than Derek Jeter over the course of his career. Every year.
Tejada.
Derek Jeter won the
Vizquel.
Award. I don't even know about Tejada. Vizquel for sure. Nomar was better.
Garcia Parra.
There was...
A-Rod was a shortstop for a long time.
A-Rod was better, of course. Not even close. The other guy in New York was better. Ray Ordonez was better. Not that he was in a different league, but I'm just saying... Derek Jeter was never an elite defensive player. He won that award because he's Derek Jeter. So Gold Gloves can be a little deceiving. I don't think it's deceiving with Mookie. I think he's legit. He has been. If you've watched him patrol that spot for these last few years, you know he's elite. He showed off his elite talent 3 times over the weekend. 3 plays that were, quite frankly, game-changing plays that helped them advance if they were on the brink of elimination. So he really doesn't have a weakness. I mean, he does do everything well. And he's marketable. I mean, you know, baseball needs to do a better job of marketing these guys. I'm sorry, they just do. And, you know, now you got the 2 best guys. They're out on the West Coast. I guess it makes it hard. A huge swath of the country just is not keyed in on them.
Well, and the East
games
Coast,
are on late.
East Coast sleeping already.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just you've got a huge chunk.
Only your gamblers are up.
Yeah.
If I said to you, Mr. Coffee, what'd you think?
Joe DiMaggio.
That's right. Right. Joe DiMaggio. We all knew who Mr. Coffee was. Joe DiMaggio.
If
I said Charlie Hustle, who do you? Who?
Pete Rose.
Of course. I don't know if Mike Trout
Jackie Underwear. Who are you talking about?
Jim Palmer. I don't know if they're not doing it. Their agent's not doing it. Baseball's not doing it in conjunction with the agents and with, what is that, Fifth Avenue out in New York and the advertisers and the marketers.
He does have Subway. Like, Mookie Betts, forget it. Does Mookie Betts have a one, like, national?
Subway? In the world of sandwiches, ready-made sandwiches like that, where would you rank Subway?
Last.
Behind Jimmy John's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Behind Jersey Mike's.
Okay.
Behind Potbelly.
He's got Subway. He's got a substandard.
Yeah, but they are like the second
meat
biggest
between
chain.
Bread?
Belichick's a bigger spokesman for Subway.
Yeah,
he's
true.
A coach,
Belichick
a football
is,
coach.
Yeah.
I know who Baker Mayfield is. He's a football player. Baseball players can't be marketed like football players.
It's hard.
Or
I
basketball
know.
Players.
We can continue the conversation tomorrow. Enjoy game 2 of the World Series tonight. We'll recap it mañana. Talk more Bears and Rams. Greeny's next. Waddle and Sylvia, too. Bleck and Abdallah after that. Thanks to Merck, J.R. Strauss, and Jeff Miller. We'll see you tomorrow.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!